next on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Rob and Pete bounce around the top breakout candidates you need to know ahead of your drafts. Who's poised for big seasons in St. Louis and Ottawa? And what are the concerns surrounding Austin Matthews in 2019? Take notes.
Hey, but you are so money and you don't even know it.
And reap the rewards.
Jensen and Reese hanging with you on this Monday morning, August 26th. Season preview episodes rolling on here, Rob.
We are cranking these things out, Pete. Today we're going to do a little breakout chatter. These are guys that really can make the difference for you on your team. If you reach for a guy that could break out, and he does break out as projected, big things are going to come for you in your season-long formats.
Now, most breakout candidates, I would say, fall in that 75 overall to 100, 150 range. That said, there are also the full-fledged breakouts, a guy maybe you can get outside the top 50 who could explode and finish into the top 10 overall, maybe even top 5 overall.
And don't forget maybe guys inside the top 50 that have perennial health problems, or they seem to always miss some time in the season. Maybe they haven't played the full 82 games yet. That could even be considered a breakout, where if that guy does play 82 games, he could be in the 100-point club.
Yeah, we projected four guys for 100+, but a lot more guys are in the running, to say the least. All of our point projections for forwards and defensemen, and also goalie and team win projections, are available now on NHL.com/fantasy.
And now we've got our guy Mike Zeisberger on the phone from NHL.com. Mike, before we dive into these breakout candidates for the 2019-20 season, heard that you had a story on Connor McDavid and perhaps maybe not being ready for training camp. What's going on there?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Yeah, I was at BioSteel camp here on Monday, the 26th of August, and Connor McDavid came and spoke to us a little bit. And, you know, when a guy comes out and says he's hoping to be ready for training camp, you know, that's not really that's a solid maybe. It's the type of thing, guys, that he even said he's not going to push the envelope on it. He's not going to rush it. So, you know what? I mean, we'll see. I don't think that, you know, anything's entrenched right now. I don't think that we can say he'll be ready for training camp. I don't think we can definitively say that he'll be ready for the start of the season yet. We'll have to wait and see. And I think the true litmus test will probably be when you see him, when he first goes onto the ice at camp. What can he do? What can't he do? What limitations will he have? He says he has been back on the ice for about 2 months, intermittently. So, but obviously, you know, when you're the fastest skater in the world, you know, you want to make sure that you're at 100%, especially for the beginning of the season. This isn't like we're talking about, oh, he's trying to get ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. This is for the beginning of the season. So, you know, I think there's a lot of gray area there, but I do think that Connor McDavid will err on the side of caution.
And all this will no doubt worry anybody who plays fantasy hockey and either already drafted him in the top three or is considering him now in the top five overall. Knowing this player, what he's done, how he's a lock for 100+ when he's healthy, how do you view Connor McDavid's value in light of all these injury concerns with his knee?
Well, you know what? All I'll say is this. If anybody in my league, if you want to, like, let him go, I certainly will take him. And if he's not ready for the first couple weeks, I generously will take that zero on my roster if you don't want Connor McDavid. How's that for an answer?
I love that.
So true, man.
I love that. And, Zeiss, you're close to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Austin Matthews is a guy I don't think you can classify as a full-fledged breakout since he's a top player. But if he plays an 82-game season, perhaps you can see an even a higher ceiling for him and his linemate, William Nylander?
Yeah, I can. At the same time, that's a big if he can play 82 games. I think that's an if with him, too, in the sense that I think that's the biggest bugaboo that he looks at when he gets ready for the season. You know, he has been marred by a few injuries. William Nylander do have some chemistry when they've been on the ice. I mean, last year I think you have to hit the reset on William Nylander. I mean, obviously we know about the his holdout, and then you know, signing in December, and he was never really the same. And mm-hmm. when we did, guys, see some flashes of the old William Nylander, you know, he was either missing the net by just a bit, or goalies were making big saves, but there wasn't. You'd see flashes, but it wasn't consistent. And I think that you know, a couple weeks ago when I was in Stockholm at the Players Media Tour, you know, William Nylander came out and says he thinks he can be a dominant player in this league, and that's his goal for this season. So whether that happens or not remains to be seen. But you know what? I mean, when you're projected to be a winger next to Auston Matthews, that at least gives you a step ahead of the of most of the pack when it comes to meeting your own criteria of being a potential dominant player.
Sticking with the Maple Leafs, it's really interesting to think about what the ceilings can be for so many of these type of players. I mean, you already see Marner in the mid-90s. You saw his line mate John Tavares in the high 80s. Can Matthews be a 100-point player to lead the Maple Leafs in scoring? Like, is that his ceiling? Is that realistic to you?
I think it's realistic if, and this is the if again. I mean, you can roll the dice, but if he can play, you know, 78 to 82 games. But, you know, there's always been that 10 to 20 game thing. He's had some shoulder issues. You know, he's the type of player where, you know, he's a bigger player, doesn't necessarily go into the dirty areas all the time. That shouldn't take away from his effectiveness. He doesn't back away either. But you know what? He's going to get a little bit extra treatment from the other teams. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a Mitch Marner, a lot of people say, oh, you know, the small guys, well, it's harder for them. Well, you know, in some ways, it allows them to squeeze away or wriggle away from some of the top physical games or players that you see. They can kind of squirm out of there. Auston Matthews, I mean, you know, when he goes to the net, I mean, there's not a lot of, he's not going to disappear in a scrum. I do think, I mean, there's no doubt about this kid's talent. There's no doubt about that. For me, I would rank him one of the top three players in the game in terms of shot accuracy, how hard it is. So, you know, especially in a league like that, he's going to get power play time. So for fantasy purposes, the ceiling is limitless for me, for Auston Matthews. It's just that, can his body hold up? And you know what I mean? That's the type of risk that you take in fantasy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. How about just give us a few names that you could see a couple guys breaking out this year in fantasy?
I look across the league. There's a couple guys. I think that Robert Thomas of the St. Louis Blues, we only saw glimpses of him a little bit. But I really, really think that, you know, at the time that he got hurt, in the playoffs, he was being an impact player. I think that with Patrick Maroon going to the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, there is a chance for Robert Thomas to get a lot more ice time on a team that plays four lines. I think that they brought Mark Savard, the former Boston Bruin, in to kind of oversee their power play. I think that Robert Thomas is going to get more time on that. So that is a kid. And I mean, you know, by breakout player, I don't mean like he's going to be in the top 10 or top 20, but a guy that Poolies can look at maybe in, you know, lower to mid rounds and say, you know, what is this guy's ceiling? We talked about that with Matthews. I think that there's a lot of upside to Robert Thomas. And, you know what, guys? Another guy, and I'm not going for the favorites here. I'm just going for, you know, when you're, if you're in an auction, you know, $3-4 players, or if you're in a draft in the lower rounds, I am very intrigued to see how the Tampa Bay Lightning power play works, because the signing of Kevin Shattenkirk, who kind of the last couple of years has faded out of our psyches. I mean, it wasn't so long ago, guys, that Kevin Shattenkirk, when he was with the, you know, now Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues, but that was a name that, you know, a lot of NHL GMs were scrambling around to try to get him in a trade. I think he's got more obviously as an offensive player, then we all know his defensive liabilities. But I would, if you're in a pool and you don't have to draft until the first week of the season, I would look at, and try to follow along any information you can of what the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing on their power play, because if Kevin Shattenkirk's main role is to be on a power play that has guys like a Stamkos and a Kucherov and a Victor Hedman on it, well, you're going to get points, okay? And he's shown he can do that. So, you know, if plus-minus doesn't matter and minutes played doesn't matter, but offensive upside does, then I think that that's a dark horse for me. But keep your eye on Kevin Shattenkirk.
That's a really interesting storyline, because JT Miller's out, so that means there's a first power play opportunity there for the taking. Another guy I would throw into that mix, Mikhail Sergachev. We were just looking. This is a potential 2020 RFA. Only scored 32 points last year. I mean, would anybody be surprised if that guy dropped 40, 45? I don't think so.
No, you know what? I mean, in my auction last year, I think I paid like $17 for him, and that was way overpriced. But you're kind of... You know what? I mean, sometimes, and I'm in a league, the Media Hacks Hockey Pool, that has a who's who of hockey media, from Pierre LeBrun to Elliot Friedman, Eric Duhatchuk. We can go down the list. So you're not going to sneak anybody in there. So when you're getting to the late end of the auction, you're kind of looking for guys, you know, like I said, going for upside. And Sergachev didn't quite get the power play time that I was hoping he would get last year, but obviously Stralman is not there anymore. You mentioned JT Miller. We'll see what happens with Braden Point. So I definitely think that when you look at the Tampa Bay power play, whether it be the first or second unit, for me, you know, it starts with Hedman at the point, and then depending how they play Stamkos, where they play him on the top of the circle, or they play him at the blue line, I think that both Sergachev and Shattenkirk will probably fit in there some way, somehow.
Who would you rather have this season, Carter Hart or Philip Grubauer?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. You know what? I'm gonna go with Grubauer just because I think it's a better team. I think that if you're in a dynasty league, then you might look at Carter Hart a little bit, say, you know what, this guy's going to be a keeper for a few years. But if it's one and done, I go with Grubauer.
Mm-hmm. So we have Grubauer for 32 wins, assuming he's going to be clearly the full-time starter for the Avalanche, who do have a young defense. That's a bit of a concern to me. And then we have Carter Hart for about 28. So our projections, which are out on NHL.com/fantasy, would support your claim. I think Hart might have the higher ceiling, though. I think he maybe could bring that positive energy to a team that has lacked it, and maybe make them a surprise in the East.
No, I agree with you, and I think that that's very true, and that's why, like, in your projections, they're only $4 apart. I just think that right now, as I look at the makeups of the teams, and yes, Colorado does have a young defense, but I just think there's more... You know, even though they might be in the hardest division in the National Hockey League, in that Central Division, because, Dallas, Winnipeg, the defending Stanley Cup champions, St. Louis Blues, there's a lot of ways you could go there. But I like the makeup of that Colorado team, and I think that Grubauer brought some stability into their goaltending. A lot of us forget, but they brought San Jose to the limit. San Jose barely got by them in Game 7. Otherwise, Colorado would have been in the Western Conference Final. So I think that they gained some confidence in Grubauer, and I think that's a team that's on the rise.
Everybody's talking about Jack Hughes in New Jersey. Is Nico Hischier a guy that could really steal the show there this season?
I don't know about steal the show, but I think that he's kind of getting lost in the shuffle. And I think that when you look at Nico Hischier, you know, people look all first overall pick and stuff. And, yeah, it wasn't one of those years where there was a Matthews or a McDavid or, you know, who we call the so-called generational player, so to speak. But I've been impressed by the way that this kid has improved his 2 years. That might be a disappointment to Pooley's because, I mean, he hasn't really racked up the points. But when you look at this team, Hischier's going to get his power play time. And when you look at that, all of a sudden, you know, you've got Jack Hughes on the team. You've got P.K. Subban on the team, which immediately makes your power play that much more lethal. And then another guy who I saw at the Bioskill camp here in Toronto was Wayne Simmonds, who is going to be one of those guys that's going to get, you know, going to get do the dirty work in front of the net and create space for a guy like Hischier. So I think that, not just because of Jack Hughes, but because of some of the other additions that the Devils made too, that has to increase Nico Hischier's point total. And, people, I understand, especially when we're in pools like we are, people are all about points. But when you look beyond the points, if you see the progressions that this kid has made, I think that he'll be a regular, third, fourth round pick in pools. I'm not so sure this year, but it's not going to be too long before he's that high up.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about Hischier, the exposure to Hall, past chemistry with him. There's guys like you mentioned, like Simmonds, Gusev, Jesper Bratt. There are a lot of options there that pertain to his value and his breakout candidacy. Another big offseason team, Nashville Predators, adding Matt Duchene. I think this is going to have a big impact on Philip Forsberg. Do you think Philip Forsberg could have a full-fledged breakout if he plays with Duchene?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, when I watch Philip Forsberg play, and I remember covering the Jets, Nashville Predators second-round series a couple of years ago, and it just jumped. He just jumped off the ice to me, like when you're watching about the skill level this guy has. I mean, this guy, and this includes Connor McDavid, whatever, if you put together a little loop of the sickest goals that you've seen in the National Hockey League in the past 2 or 3 years, with like the way he can put the puck on the end of his stick blade and just the deeks and stuff, I think he would be at the top of the list. But I think consistency has been something that people have strived for out of him. It's just like you see these highlight reel moments and you say, well, how come this doesn't happen every game? Well, part's on the player, part's on his supporting cast. And I think that, Ryan Johansson is there, but Matt Duchene is a different player. Matt Duchene brings the element of speed, and that is something that Philip Forsberg has too. Put those two guys together, and they will create a lot of open ice for each other.
Is there any team that comes to mind that could be flying under the radar that maybe has a breakout candidate or two?
I was thinking about this the other day. A lot of people are trying to look and for that exact thing. I'm not sure if there's a team, but when I start looking, I like some of the things that the Chicago Blackhawks have done. Mm-hmm. I think that, adding on to the defense might make Duncan Keith somebody that, if you're looking to fill out your lineup. A couple of years ago I had him. He didn't score, I think, till January.
Yeah.
But I think he's not going to have to play as much as he was. And I kind of like some of the things that Stan Bowman has done. I love Alex DeBrincat. I watched him in junior in Erie. I think the fact that they brought in Dylan Strome, I'm not ready to have a Dylan Strome on my team quite yet. But I thought it was amazing chemistry between those two guys who played in Erie together. I don't think that DeBrincat is a breakout candidate or Duncan Keith. But I think those are guys that you might want to look at because I think Chicago might be a little better than people think they are.
Yeah, Dylan Strome is on our breakout list. Funny enough, he's a guy that could translate what he did close to point per game over a full season, so he's got to be in this breakout candidate list. One other question for you, Mike. looking at the rookie class of last year and forward specifically, two names jump out on our breakout list. There's Andrei Svechnikov from the Hurricanes and Brady Tkachuk from a team that we expect to be a lottery team, but still going to be some value there. Who do you like better, Tkachuk or Svechnikov?
You know what? I actually like Tkachuk better. And I'm going to be honest, guys. It's for the fact that I saw a fair amount of Ottawa games. I did not see a lot of Carolina games. So I know how much Carolina is enamored with Svechnikov. I would say this. When you look at that Ottawa Senators lineup, by the end of the season, Brady Tkachuk was a go-to guy. And whether that's, you know, addition by subtraction because some of the moves they made and all the trades they did, whatever. This kid has shown himself to be a leader in that dressing room, and he hasn't even, as far as I know, I don't think he's had his 20th birthday yet. So, you know, that in itself is very impressive, and I think he's going to get gobs of ice time. I think he's going to get power play time. To make the argument that he might be their number one center. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how DJ Smith handles that, the new coach of the Ottawa Senators. But I will say this as well, okay? DJ Smith's claim to fame is how good he developed players. He did that with the Toronto Maple Leafs, with some of the young defensemen. He did that in Oshawa when he won the Memorial Cup. And you know what? The year that he coached the Generals to win the Memorial Cup, they beat Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters in the OHL final. So you know this guy knows how to develop good talent. And, you know, when I talked to him at the draft, he was just so eager to be able to work with a guy like, you know, Brady Tkachuk and a Thomas Chabot, who, guys, I mean, I just want to add this very quickly. I think that Thomas Chabot, if he's not already, is going to be a top five fantasy defenseman for years and years to come. I just am so impressed with this kid since he played in junior, and I just think that he's just going to get better and better and better, a franchise defenseman that every team is looking for.
Wow, I might bump up Chabot a few spots in my rankings there after that, Seiss. But thank you for joining us, and enjoy what's left of your summer here.
Anytime, guys, and it's a great podcast. I'm very privileged to be on it. Let me know again if you need anything. And for listeners out there, keep tuning in because these guys know their stuff. Thanks for having me.
Big Z, always a great guy at the rink and outside of the rink, a good time too. So he gave us some good insight. But Pete, outside of the guys we spoke about, I've got a few guys on my radar. I'm going to start with the Toronto Maple Leafs here, two guys we didn't touch on, Kapanen and Janssen. Is that potential that be a 30-goal scorer for either one of them?
I like Janssen more. I think that Kapanen's a better defensive forward. I think Janssen has a good chance to play on the left side of Matthews and Nylander. We have him as a sleeper candidate, but it doesn't matter what you call him. He has a chance to maybe score 55, 60 points with 30-plus goals if he plays with those strong line mates. So, yeah, he's a guy in the late rounds, very attainable, outside the top 150 overall. I like that pick quite a bit. One guy that I was looking at, and we've been looking at him a lot, he is tied to Elias Pettersson. It's Brock Besser. This is a guy that could score 40 goals. He's going to be available most likely outside the top 50 overall. And you could pounce on this guy and reap the rewards whether you have Pettersson or not.
It's true. Now, there is the injury concern ticket on that one. But if he's available around the 60 to 65 range as a right wing, very attractive in that range, that's probably where I would target him. And hey, you're getting a number one line right wing outside the top 50. Sign me up for that any day of the week.
And let's bounce around the map here. Let's go outside the top 100 overall at a very scarce position, defense. Mm-hmm. I like Shea Theodore. I think this is his year that he drops 45, 50 points with 20 plus on the power play. You look at this guy's career highs. I know he's only been around for a couple years. Career high 9 power play points. He got half of that in the playoffs alone last year.
Well, that player's a little concerning for me, and he's had every opportunity to break out the past two seasons, and he hasn't done it. That's a player that it's not that I wouldn't draft him. It's just I'm not going to reach for a player like that. It really, on paper, that team is going to be so good. I think their forwards are going to get a lot of points. I think there's going to be a point share on defense between him and Nate Schmidt. I hope for their sake that he can quarterback that power play well, but that was a toss-up between him and Colin Miller, and that's something that should not be happening.
And Colin Miller's off to Buffalo now, so maybe they give Theodore, more power play usage. He was a fixture in the playoffs with Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, and Paul Stastny. Pacioretty's another guy. His career high in points is like high 60s. Would you be surprised if he put up a point per game on a line with Stone and a power play with Theodore?
I'd be stunned. I mean, after 10 years really? In the league, if this guy all of a sudden has an 80-point season, that would shock me. Not that it's not possible, but I think when, again, going back to their forward depth there, there's so many guys that can put the puck in the net. Alex Tuck's a guy that's going to be on the first power play, and he could even see a bigger role at even strength. I wouldn't say that anything is necessarily set in stone for that Vegas team. I like what Pacioretty brings to the table as like the 30 to 35 goal scorer, and you know what you're getting there. But you're also getting some injury concerns too.
It's weird, too, how that line has shifted to the second line, that Carlson-Marchessault line. I mean, now William Karlsson got his left wing taken away. Now I feel like he's an afterthought in fantasy only 2 years after dropping 40 goals. So we'll see what happens. But either way, I really like Shea Theodore. I think he's going to finish as a top 15-20 fantasy defenseman.
I'd probably steer the ship in favor of Charlie McAvoy for the Boston Bruins. Get a little bit of a younger player, a little bit more edge, a little bit more category coverage with some physical play, too. You get the hits. I love the added hits bonus. Every time I'm up between two players and I know one player hits and the other doesn't, I don't even have to think about it. I automatically select the guy that's going to bring the physical edge.
Really good debate here. I was just looking at between McAvoy, who's on our list in the others section, and also Aaron Ekblad, who's on the list in the actual top 10. Who do you like more? Those are two powerful teams offensively, and Ekblad's never even hit 40 points before.
I'm a McAvoy stickler, so I view the player with a little bit higher upside. But Aaron Ekblad, let's not forget here, this is a Coach Q team. And Coach Q, normally when he's at the helm, you're going to see two or three guys on their blue line be fantasy relevant like we saw in Chicago. So don't be surprised to see Aaron Ekblad hit that, maybe that, you know, 20-goal mark, which is potential for him, and then maybe that 45, 50-point mark too.
We always say the thing, would you be surprised? Would you be surprised if Aaron Ekblad led all defensemen in goals?
No,
I would not.
Not at all.
And Rob, a couple other names that were thrown our way on Twitter. Svechnikov, who we talked about with Big Zeiss. There's also Jared McCann, who could play maybe on Crosby's wing. Mm-hmm. And then there is also Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I know you already probably have a jersey with that name on the back.
That is a mint breakout candidate pick. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, former number 3 overall pick. This kid can flat out play. And he was, you know, don't discount what he did last season. I know he didn't put up flashy numbers, but he got good usage from head coach Claude Julien. And I think this kid can score potentially 25, 30 goals in the NHL. And he's great at passing, too. So when you put that formula together, if you're not good at math, you're probably looking at around 50-point floor for this player. And I think that Montreal Canadiens team, I'm going to double down on this. I think they slide into the playoffs this season, too.
That could happen. We projected them, what, for 42 wins?
That's right.
The thick of the maybe the final spot in the Eastern Conference. My concern with Kotkaniemi is not so much the player, it's the usage. They have Max Domi playing center. They have Philip Deneau carrying a really heavy workload, considering he's a player that is not really fantasy relevant. Mm-hmm. So maybe those things stand in his way. That said, if he was on a line, Kotkaniemi, with a Brendan Gallagher, I would love that upside.
I love that. And hey, Max Domi could even shift back to wing. So there is options. Phil Deneau's great at faceoff, so he won't be playing wing. But if they do tinker a little bit like that, and you get Kotkaniemi in the last round of a fantasy draft, and all of a sudden, week one, he's lining up alongside Max Domi, cha-ching.
That would be something else and something to behold for fantasy owners. Now, we talked about a couple of goalies earlier with Zeiss in Grubauer and Carter Hart. There's another one on our breakout list, and it's David Riddick. The Flames won the West last year with this guy as a timeshare with Mike Smith. Now Smith is gone. What's up with Riddick?
Well, this is the most important position for breakouts, because if you get yourself into a little pickle in fantasy drafts, you get your number one goalie, and then you feel good, and you kind of forget for a couple rounds. You fall asleep at the wheel. All of a sudden, oh my God, I don't have a number two goalie. David Riddick's your guy. This is a guy that they're going to give every opportunity to be the number one starter. Granted, that does come with some risk at the position. These guys aren't used to playing 50, 60 games. But I do think David Riddick's capable of it. And the team he's playing, he's got playing in front of him, really solid. He should be able to rack up around 30 to 32 wins.
It's just really weird that Riddick didn't play in the playoffs last year. That's something that still I'm scratching my head about. I know Smith played well, but I mean, you're an emerging team in the Western Conference, and you flame out, pardon the pun. But yeah, I think that Riddick, I still have some concerns. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Cam Talbot took the starting job from David Riddick. Mm-hmm. No knock on him. It's just the way that the cookie crumbles sometimes.
I hear you. And that's the risk you run with this position too. So if you do get yourself in that position, make sure you have an insurance policy. I'm just going to throw out a couple forwards too to end up the show here. Sure. I've got Gustav Nyck with Columbus. That is a real no-brainer because it's the role he's going to be given after all the departures. Jakub Vrána for the Washington Capitals could be a 30-goal scorer. And then Travis Konechny for the Philadelphia Flyers can play all three positions. Will be interesting to see where he lines up.
And another guy not to forget about is Jake DeBrusque. I mean, hello, he's on the first power play unit with Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, and Torrey Krug in a contract year. I think he makes more out of that usage than he did last year. Maybe makes the jump to 55, 60 points playing with Krejci at even strength.
I love that pick. I would be all over DeBrusque late rounds too.
So that'll do it, Rob, for this breakouts episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Let's hop on the train downtown and grab some lunch.
Let's do it. Burger and lobster, I'm all over it. And hey, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but please rate and review the show and subscribe. It's free. If you haven't already, I'm trying to eat lunch 5 days a week, so please give us a pop.
Yeah, last time I checked, everybody, that's pretty cheap. So check out the other episodes of our show, breaking down preseason, all storylines, you name it, mock draft, bounce back candidates, top rookies. We're really excited to keep this rolling on. So for Rob Reese, Mike Zeisberger, Pete Jensen saying so long. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.